Welcome to this special eight-show series on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. What are you eating, and why should you care? Throughout this broadcast, Mrs. Green examines how true preservation of the planet starts with your fork. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And trust me when I say we are going to give you a lot to think about today. Thanks for joining us for the second of our eight-show special series on healthy eating. What am I eating and why should I care? It all starts with your fork. This show is made possible due in part to the support of Chapman Tucson, whose dealerships in fact sell some of the most fuel efficient and cleaning burnous cars on the planet. And that really matters as well as what's on your fork. So please check them out at chapmantucson.com. My guest today for the second of our series about what am I eating and why should I care is Dr. Doug Lyle. And Dr. Lyle is the co-author of The Pleasure Trap, which will inform and delight, trust me. He's the director of research for True North Health Center in Santa Rosa, California. He is absolutely a nationally sought-after public speaker, has presented at several TED Talks, I believe. I've watched one about five times, and was featured in the movie Forks Over Knives, another life-changing experience for anybody who takes the time to watch it. He's an internationally recognized public speaker, as I said, and an educator about food and our health. Dr. Doug Lyle, welcome and thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me, Gina.
Well, there's going to be, you know, I said to you off air when we were doing our line test, I appreciate your doing this because I really want to talk about the pleasure trap, and I'm sure anybody that gets to have a bit of Dr. Doug Lyle wants to do the same thing. But why don't we set a little bit of the stage in terms of your journey as a psychologist and how it led you to focus on health and food and getting people healthier. It had to all start somewhere. So can you share that with us a little bit?
Sure. I'm part of a sort of a two-person team. The other, the evil twin is Dr. Alan Goldhammer, who's a chiropractor and who learned about healthy eating, you know, way back when we were in our early 20s. And so he became like this fanatic, and then he dragged me along with him, basically kicking and screaming for quite a while. And he basically pretty quickly found out that it was difficult for people to make this change and difficult for people to stick with it. And so he said, look, I figured out what to do. Now you figure out how to help people do it. And that has been the task, and it's been a challenge. It's been interesting, and we've learned a lot along the way.
So is he the one that says, okay, this is how it works. I'm going to push you in front of the crowd, and you're going to tell our story? That kind of evil twin?
Yeah, he's the evil twin. You'll get a chance to meet him next month, then you'll know. Then you'll understand everything.
I cannot wait, and we're going to promo that a lot because it's going to be life-changing for me because I haven't totally crossed over, so we'll talk about that more in the show. So I want to repeat the whole conversation I had off-air, is that in my entire life, no one has really explained to me in layman's terms why we in our generation now, and I'd say it happened over the past 50 to 60 years because I was actually raised eating healthy food, why we have morphed into this pleasure trap of unhealthy eating. Your explanation of that put the puzzle pieces together. So where do we start? I mean, let's go in the right direction. And if you want to start with the story of the Grey Shrike, I'm good. The great Grey Shrike male.
Well, I think I'll actually start with the story of how I came upon this understanding.
Okay, perfect.
And what happened was that I was, because of Alan Goldhammer, I was quite a healthy eater in stretches. And then I would fall off the wagon and then get back on, et cetera. This went on for many years. And at one point, what happened was I was in Texas for a few years, and I had a had a lady friend there. And then when I moved out to California to join Alan in his practice, we had to say goodbye. But she knew something about me that other people didn't know, which she knew that I liked Snickers bars.
Oh, my gosh, me too. Tell me you don't like them anymore. Have hope.
Well, actually, I'll tell you the story. So she was also kind of proud of herself that she had read War and Peace like 6 times.
Oh, my gosh.
So I had heard personally that War and Peace was really boring, so I didn't know what to make of this information. So anyway, when I moved out to California around January of 1998, I actually moved in with my friend Alan Goldhammer while I was looking for a place to stay, he and his family. And so, obviously, if you're living with Alan Goldhammer, you're eating really clean.
So clean food.
I was eating absolutely the cleanest food. So 6 weeks goes by, and this friend sends me for Valentine's Day, is sort of a token of our friendship. She sends me a sack of Snickers bars of the little Halloween's ones,
yes,
and the book War and Peace.
Oh my gosh. So we know she had a sense of humor.
She had a sense of humor, right. So what happens then is that because I'm eating clean, the Snickers bars have really no appeal. So they sit on my dresser for about a month, and so did War and Peace. So just sat there. Then one day in about the middle of March of 1998, I was all caught up and my work was all tidy and my desk was clear. And I'd had a nice dinner, and actually Alan and his wife were gone on a vacation. So I had the whole house to myself and there's nobody around. And I thought to myself, you know what? What am I, some kind of saint? I'm going to sit down and I'm gonna sit down and read a little bit of War and Peace. And I'm going to eat a couple of these little Snickers bars.
Oh,
we'll just see what happens.
I was going to say, how did Alan allow the Snickers in the house? I guess
he didn't know they were there.
The hidden Snickers.
They came in a nice box with War and Peace, so he never knew they were in the house. So anyway, the long and short of it is, by the time I was 5 pages into War and Peace, I'd eaten a whole sack of Snickers bars.
Oh, gosh, that's great. I thought you were going to say I ate one and it tasted so horrible I threw it out, but now you are clearly human.
Yes, actually, I can tell you it was such a memory because I'd been so clean for about 3 months going in, but I remember to this day the moment of what that tasted like. And what it tasted like was a surprise because it tasted metallic. It actually had a metallic taste.
Interesting.
And it tasted way sugary and artificial and lousy.
Right.
Okay? And so that experience, it was literally mildly disgusting. And then within about 5 seconds, my experience started to change. And so then I just continued stuffing myself, even though I was already full. And I realized that there wasn't enough chocolate in Sonoma County at this rate to get me through War and Peace.
Oh, gosh. Oh, my gosh.
So I looked at the all the little wrappers around me, and I thought something really interesting happened here, and I'm not really sure what it was. And I was puzzled myself because I hadn't had any inkling that would have happened. And that's when it started me on a journey to think through this. I actually confessed this to Alan 6 months later.
Okay, we're going to confession here.
Yeah, so I go to confession, and then we start talking about it, and I talk through the whole thing, and he says, you know, this sounds exactly like what happens with alcoholics. And, you know, I had worked with drug addicts and alcoholics for about 2 years at the National Center for PTSD in Palo Alto with combat veterans who often have these problems. And he was absolutely right. I hadn't quite conceptualized it that way, but I was looking at my experience. It was very much the way people that struggle with alcohol will tell you that, you know, the one drink, if they don't drink at all, it's not a problem, but one drink is exceedingly difficult to do. and it will start a barrage. And that's exactly what happened with chocolate. And I thought, wow, this looks like the same process. And then when I looked into the science, it turns out it is.
It is the same process. And you did look into the science. So that's, you know, when you're describing that, I've been there. I cannot eat one. I don't eat them anymore. I'm proud to say that. But like Hershey's Kisses, I can't eat one. If they're in the house, 50 are gone. And it tasted like I had a couple of bites. So it is so food addiction. I mean, it is so the quintessence of food addiction. So yes, it is. Okay, so the pleasure trap, if you're ready to go there, does talk about the science in a way that I don't know how to explain my feelings, but it didn't make me feel guilty. It was very liberating to understand why I am definitely addicted to many of the wrong foods and ready to take the plunge. So let's have some fun and share some of the incredible research that you did to be able to explain it to the masses. That's the most important thing about your message.
Yes, well, we try. Let me start by explaining what feelings are. So what feelings are, we now understand. We did not know this. Had you talked to a psychologist, even a leading emotion theorist in 1988, they would not have been able to tell you this.
Right.
So this insight is really quite new to psychology and hasn't really been written into the textbooks even yet. Feelings are signaling devices. They're actually a device to signal the organism to features of their interaction with the environment that indicate either a positive or negative value with respect to survival or reproduction. So let me go through that kind of quickly so we get this clear. So you're designed by nature to have a really good feeling when if it's a little bit cool and you go out in the sun and it gets warmer.
Right.
So that's a signal to tell you, go ahead and stay in the sun because that's being helpful for you.
Right.
Okay? If you're in the sun and it's too hot for your survival as a human, you step under a tree, it instantly feels better. Okay? So the shade is the feeling of the reduction of temperature that feeling is a signal of relief.
Right.
Telling you that you just did the right thing to increase your likelihood of survival. Okay? If it's 1958 and Cary Grant is flirting with you, that feels good.
It would feel very good. It would,
right.
Even though I was eight, I still would have liked it.
That's right. Well, for me, it would have been Sophia, but however we
mapped this. That's good. I get it.
Okay, so when my cat, you know, takes a dump on the carpet, that's not a good thing.
Not a good feeling.
So if I smell it, what this tells me is there's harmful bacteria that if they get inside of me, it's going to threaten my survival.
Right.
Okay. So all of your feelings are signals, and they're there to tell us a story, and they're there to tell us what to do. So we start there, and then we realize, wait a second, are there, you know, has something been done to the feeling process to lead us astray? And the answer is yes, and that's what Alan Goldhammer and I call the pleasure trap.
And even explaining feelings. So I wanted to ask, I wish I could press pause in the TED Talk I listened to and say, so, Dr. Lyle, the feelings as a baby around food, is that when it starts? Is what, you know, I always believed breastfed was best fed, so that's what I fed my children. Mm-hmm. But what happens then? Like when you're born, do you show up with this feeling that Snickers are going to taste good?
Yes, you do.
You're
designed by nature to actually, you're sensitive to certain chemicals. And
okay.
The chemicals that you're real sensitive to are sugar, fat, and salt. And those are the big three. And so you've got sensors on your tongue to detect those chemicals in food, because those three things are essential nutrients for your survival. And they're basically, if you think of your tongue and your smelling or your olfactory system, it's basically like a metal detector for somebody who's looking for gold.
Right.
So when you see these guys walking along the beach with a metal detector, they're hoping to find, you know, buried treasure.
Right.
That's exactly what your taste and smelling systems are for. They're looking for buried treasure. And the buried treasure they're looking for is they're looking for sugar, fat, and salt buried inside of food. So in apples, there's almost no fat, so it doesn't have any sort of creamy texture.
Right.
And it doesn't have hardly any salt at all, so they don't taste salty, but what they taste is sweet. And so that sweet is a signal. It's a detecting signal to tell you that there's sugar in there that you can use.
Okay. And it feels good. It gives you pleasure.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And so it turns out that that signal, it's a pretty sensitive signaling device. It's like, in fact, as we go on today, we're going to find out that it's unbelievably sensitive signaling device. But it's your life, your body is like a precious painting that's been passed down for many, many, many generations. And as a result, it needs great protection. It needs an alarm system, as if you're a famous painting in the Louvre. Okay.
Right.
Well, if you have a smoke detector in the Louvre, you better believe that smoke detector is really, really sensitive. And in the same way, your body is a very sensitive detector for calories. And we're going to look at that sensor in a minute. But I want to point out that you are built basically like a metal detecting device looking for treasure. So you are really good at beeping faster and faster when the calorie concentration gets higher.
I guess part of what puzzles me is certainly believing you, and I mean I come from a long line of multi-generational chocoholics. I mean, if ever
yes.
there was a mother that was addicted to chocolate, she hid it from us. You know, she'd go out the driveway and all the kids would be looking for where she hid the chocolate. It was like Pavlov's dogs. I swear to God, we really did it. But
yeah.
How do you get, I mean, just the thought of it, it's like, oh my God. And I used to remember I was so happy when I was the one that found it because I would yeah. eat it first before I shared it with my sisters. So it goes that far and that deep. And yet
yes.
you can help us morph. And I know we're skipping ahead and I'm
sure.
just saying to where I could actually wake up and think that I wanted like a fresh asparagus or some kale. So let's just go through the steps. We're on feelings, but it's like,
yes.
okay, you're going to get us there and talk right. about our buttons and how we start morphing the change. So we go from feelings.
Yes.
And another one I think you described was like there's pleasure, which is the chocolate, and then pain
yes.
avoidance. So
yes.
do you want, is that the next logical step to talk about? Because I'm already, you know, swooning over the Snickers.
right. Well, the next logical step is to understand that that we're designed by nature, first of all, to trust our feelings.
Right.
Okay? Your feelings are the most trustworthy guides. These are essentially ancient wisdom that is passed down through the genetic code to each new generation. And you're supposed to obey it. And so you're supposed to get out of the sun when you're too hot. You're supposed
right.
to get into the sun when it's warm. You're supposed to drink when it's thirsty. And you're supposed to go to sleep when you're tired. And you are supposed to seek calories. And you're designed by nature to get more excited the more calories there are per bite. Okay? So this is you're designed to follow these essentially ancient prescriptions for survival. Because in this case, in the case of food, you're designed by nature to food is all about energy, is what it's all about, essentially. There's some nutrients in there too, but basically it's about energy. So it's critical to get enough energy to survive, and our ancestors had to struggle with that. And so therefore, the food that had the more calories per bite was, in effect, food that was more associated with survival.
Okay.
And so that may be, we're going to start there. That's our first section. And the next thing we're going to talk about is what happens when you mess with that process, when you mess with the signals.
Okay, it's perfect because we have to take a short break. You did it for me so well.
Okay.
And everybody, hang on to that last thought, those last two thoughts. We are talking with Dr. Doug Lyle. He is the co-author with Alan Goldhammer of the book, The Pleasure Trap, Mastering the Hidden Force That Undermines Health and Happiness. And everybody, on break, think about that. What we're eating is undermining our health and our happiness. So please stay here with me. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some pretty impressive news about the VW Jetta TDI. It's got a turbocharged clean diesel engine, it's 90% cleaner than previous diesel engines, it gets 609 miles on one tank of gas, more than the Prius. That's from Tucson, Arizona to San Diego and halfway back. And it's got an amazing 6-speed Tiptronic transmission. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI or visit ChapmanTucson.com.
Bookman Sports Exchange is now open at 3330 East Speedway. We're taking our passion and experience of buying, selling, and trading books and music and applying it to the world of sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear. We are giving you another way to save money on the things that you love, Bookman style. Remember, Bookman Sports Exchange, sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear, now open daily from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Speedway east of Country Club. Check out bookmans.com for more info.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And we're giving you some life-changing opportunities to think today about the pleasure trap and about mastering the hidden force that is undermining our health and happiness. And if you don't think so, look a little bit at our health care statistics about our disease rates of almost everything. And I, of course, constantly make the strong connection to it starts with our fork. So Dr. Lyle, thank you so much for being with us. It's Dr. Doug Lyle. He's the co-author of The Pleasure Trap. He's the director of research for True North Health Center in Santa Rosa. And he has a great informative TED Talk that I encourage you to check out. And if you Google Doug Lyle, it just comes up, L-I-S-L-E. So let's start where we left off. Pick up where we left off.
Well, great. What we're going to talk about now, Gina, is we're going to talk about how these signals, our feelings, are supposed to be trusted. And yet today, we can no longer trust them. So let's talk about why that is and obviously why this is so confusing and difficult. So we can begin with what I call a story of three apples. So I want you to think about an apple that an apple on average is about 300 calories a pound. And standard size apple is about half a pound. So a standard size apple has about 150 calories in it. Except we're going to say that the apple that we're going to be looking at now is supposed to be red, but it's not red. It's actually kind of half red and half green. So it's not quite ripe. So we're going to say that this guy's maybe 135 calories instead of 150 because all the sugar has not come into that apple. So if it takes about 15 bites, this is quick math, but nobody has to get out their calculator.
Right.
If it takes about 15 bites to eat it, then a 135-calorie apple is about 9 calories per bite. So if you think of your mouthful of apple, there's about 9 calories in that bite when you chew it up. Only thing is, you don't want to chew it up because it's sour. Okay? So there's just not quite enough sugar in there for your brain to say this is worth chewing and swallowing. So let's see what it would take in order for you to be happy about this. So we're going to look at another apple right next to it that is ripe. And this apple's got a full 150 calories. So in 15 bites, it's got 10 calories a bite. So notice that the difference between 9 calories in your mouth and 10 calories in your mouth, 1 calorie difference is the difference between you saying, forget it, or saying, that's good.
You are kidding me.
Yes.
That's the science of what happens?
Yes. So okay. you are really sensitive. So one little calorie distributed it throughout your entire mouth, that which is an almost incredibly small amount of energy, that tiny, tiny little bit of extra sugar is enough to change your entire experience. Okay? So now I want everybody to think about the following. So we got these two apples next to each other.
Right.
And then we're going to look at another apple, except this apple is going to be made out of chocolate.
I just was going to say to you, I'm thinking, as soon as you said three apples, I thought one of them is going to be a caramel apple, which is there's my programming.
we're going
straight to the chocolate.
We're going to the straight stuff here. So if we go to a chocolate apple, and we got chocolate apples about 3,000 calories a pound, so it's 10 times the calorie density of a regular apple. So that means a bite, instead of being 10 calories, a bite of a chocolate apple is going to be 100 calories. So I want you to think now about how your brain works. 9 calories, it says, not worth eating.
Right.
1 more calorie, it says, whoa, 10 calories, this is good. Think about what's happening in the brain when you go from 10 calories to 100 calories.
Yeah, it's a party. There's a party going on.
Yeah, it's a party.
There's a party going on.
It's a Russian fireworks show.
Yeah, it is. It's like, wow, skyrockets in flight.
Absolutely. Okay. And so think about the signal and what signal is being sent. The signal that's being sent is saying, get this, more of it, get more, get more, get more, get more, get more, get more. Okay. This is like nature on sale. This is like everything at Macy's just went 90% off.
Right. Okay. And I've got to go right now. So yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So if normally sweaters were $50, they're $5, you would go down there and get all you could afford.
Right.
And your brain, when it runs into chocolate, it says, get all we can stand until we're in pain, essentially. And that's exactly what happened to me the night of the War and Peace.
The Snickers secret that is out. Yeah.
Yeah, I ate until I was done. Until there was no more left in the sale, and actually I was experiencing a little bit of pain, but the pain wasn't enough to override what we're going to call the supernormal experience of the pleasure. So we have, in this life, we have normal experiences that cause a certain amount of pleasure activity, and that's going to be food. Sex is going to be more intense than that, because sex is actually the way genes get reproduced.
Right.
And so therefore the system was designed to make sure that you survive.
Right.
But what it's really excited about is reproduction.
Right.
And so and the chemical that's involved in both of these things is the same one, and that's called dopamine. So the dopamine pathway signals the value of the food that you eat relative to your survival in the same way that sexual excitation signals the biological value of the reproduction,
right,
you know, process that you're in.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the pleasure piece.
Yes. So we're essentially little creatures being induced by nature to do things that are in the best interest of our survival and reproduction. And what's going to happen to us now is that if we monkey or we fiddle with those experiences, we can enhance them. So let's talk for a minute about certain enhancements. We're designed by nature to really like to hang out with people and to listen to their voices,
right,
and also actually to listen to them sing. So we're from the time we're babies, we like to hear our mom sing to us.
Right.
And that's a sign that she's happy, and it's a sign that we're valued, etc. So human beings are designed by nature to love the sound of singing, okay? So now I want you to think about the sound of your mom's voice singing, which is nice, and then we're going to put a 100-piece orchestra, and we're going to make it Celine Dion.
Right, okay.
Okay?
Good choice.
So, right.
For me.
So we're going to, yes, and so what we're going to find is that we don't just like the sound of it. It can be essentially addictive. So if I have a song in my car that I really like with a nice stereo system, I sometimes don't want to get out of the car.
Right, right. And
I
it's very
drive
soothing
around the block
and healing. Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Make it louder. I mean, yeah, I get
yes.
it.
Yes. So what we've done with it, that's a very harmless but extremely enjoyable, what we're going to call supernormal stimulus.
Okay.
So it's no longer normal. It's actually hyper-signaling, superb value. So the people aren't just happy, they're real happy. You know, we're not just being invited to be included. It's the Beatles singing "I Want to Hold Your Hand."
Right, right.
And it feels real happy, okay? And so in the same way, we also really love landscapes. We're designed by nature to look for certain landscapes that are conducive to human survival. For example, landscapes that have flowers, because
right.
flowers are a reliable sign of ripening fruit. So just think of looking at a little, oh, I don't know, I haven't been there, but think about a little roadside florist in Paris, okay?
Right.
Just loaded with all kinds of different flowers. And think about how pretty that would be. And what that's telling you is that that's a supernormal signal that tells you there's a lot of food available in this habitat.
And a lot of pleasure in the feeling. I mean, it's like bees
yes.
to honey. It's, yeah, I can conjure that up in my head quite easily.
Yes, and if you think about landscapes more generally, human beings love the looks of water, and they also, so they like not just greenery, they like a lot of different kinds of greenery, like
right.
different plants and flowers, and they also like water, and they don't just like the look of water, they like the sound of it. So human beings also like rolling hills, because rolling hills provide protection from predators,
right.
so they can't see us. And also gravitational advantage if you get on top of a hill. So people actually like to look down on scenes that have water and on greenery and flowers, and so they're turning the whole world into a big golf course.
Right. That's so, which is not a pleasure trap for me, by the way. But
yeah,
they're pretty to look at.
Yes. And so you see that we really like those views, and we like the flowers, and we like the sounds of great music.
Right.
And we like stories being told to us where we can maybe learn something. So instead of a story by the fireside 10,000 years ago, instead we have a story that's being told to us by beautiful actors and actresses with music, lights, set, great directors, brilliant writing, and we have, you know, a love story like Titanic.
Right, right.
Okay? And so all of this comes together in what we're going to call supernormal stimuli. And that is what the modern food supply is. Modern food supply is the Titanic. It's the Beatles and Beethoven. It's the great stories. It's the great flowers. It's the great landscapes. It's the beautiful homes. Except that unlike all of those things, this one's destructive. Okay, so of all of the beautiful things human beings have done to enhance their experience of their senses, this is the one that is a problem. There's one right next to it, obviously, drugs. So drugs are a supernormal stimulus in a weird way, because, you know, there's nothing romantic or sexy about taking some weird pill, because the pill doesn't look fancy, but we learn that the pill might be morphine, you know what I mean, and it causes a big dopamine or endorphin storm that we find pleasurable. But food does have a sexiness to it. It has texture, it has taste, it has social aspects to it. And so it also has, the way it looks, it can actually look enticing. So foods, you know, a strawberry ice cream cone is a very interesting looking thing. And so what has happened is the food has turned it, we've morphed the food into supernormal stimuli, hyper-concentrating sugar, fat, and salt, and so that the signal of pleasure is way enhanced. And so people then wind up, obviously, directing their behavior towards these foods, and it turns out that it just gets us all out of balance.
And this is what I'm going to tell you. When you said that, so I'm you can tell, obviously, that I'm very tuned in to what you're saying. So you
yeah.
said strawberry ice cream, and I
yes.
thought of a strawberry ice cream cone, a waffle cone, and then
yes.
my mouth watered because I am
yeah.
paying attention. I mean, my mouth literally watered, and I thought, wow, that sounds like it's on my list today. But I have to ask you this, and this
yes.
is this is, okay, my thought came back of what I wanted to ask you after the break. So what happened in the past 60 years that has so gotten us on the very wrong path. If this is in our genetic coding and it's in our makeup and it's a normal stimulus, why the shift to what you say in your talk is that we're eating now meat, fish, fowl, eggs, dairy products, salt, sugar, pizza, burgers? What happened in the last 60 years? Because the food we ate did not always kill us, give us heart disease, or did it? I guess I want to ask you that because, you know, my grandfather lived till, we all have these stories, he lived till he was almost 90 years old. He smoked 3 packs of Camels a day. He drank. But bottom line is he mostly ate fresh, healthy food because that's what we had when we were growing up. Fast food, not happening for my father. Like, no, we're not going to McDonald's. So what happened so quickly to get us in this compromised state we're in?
Well, what happened was human beings got smarter at figuring out how to concentrate these chemicals.
Oh, my God. Okay.
So they got really good at it because there was financial success behind this. And in the same way that people had been chewing coca leaves in South America for the last several thousand years.
Right.
But it wasn't until the 1850s that they synthesized cocaine out of it. So there's nothing particularly wrong with chewing coca leaves. It will give you a very mild lift, kind of the way maybe a quarter of a cup of coffee would. It was pretty mild, no big deal. It's not going to disrupt anybody's life.
No, I did it in the Amazon when I was getting sick from altitude sickness. And I'm telling you, I didn't get addicted, but boy, was I glad to have that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Very interesting.
Just chew it.
Yes, exactly. So that this would be the equivalent of our little riper apple.
Right.
In other words, it's just a mild, within normal ranges of the pleasure experience. Once they were able to find the chemical and find a way to distill it and to make it super concentrated, now you have a deadly self-destructive drug. Okay? So this is exactly what the food supply is. We've now figured out how to feed people the straight dope. And the modern food supply has become basically a contest among ingenious chemists and food chemists to try to figure out just how concentrated to make this stuff and in what kind of combinations in order to drive consumer behavior. So it is now basically our natural instincts against the modern genius of the collective. You know, it's basically your little personal mind born into this world basically defenseless except for some signaling devices to help you in the environment of your ancestry. You have, you know, hang out with friends, look for nice habitats, get into the shade, and eat the apple that's riper. These are the signals that you're designed to follow. However, if we put you in the environment where we have Starbucks, and we have Jack Daniels, and we have cheeseburgers, and we have Fritos, we put you in that environment, and you are going to be led directly into the pleasure trap, which is where we have super concentrated these chemicals, and we are drinking and eating the concentrated sources and banging the pleasure centers as hard as they can be banged.
Drinking the Kool-Aid. I mean, it's just, it's so seductive. I mean, that's the word that I can use. And
yes.
I know that we're going to get into the part in the show where you're giving us hope. And I'd like to share a personal experience that I had yesterday. But I mean, it is so seductive. You wake up not craving asparagus as a mainstream human being, and you bacon and eggs, the smell of bacon, like really most people that I know that are vegetarians, when you ask them what they miss the most, they say bacon. And because that affects every sense, your tongue, your smell, you know, the fat, you got it. Bacon's got it all going on. So I get it. Okay. So go on. It's you've got me. So we're in the double your pleasure, double your fun, double your health risk, double your profit to the big businesses that are getting us to really think this is a good thing.
Yes, if we think about this, we don't have to think that there's some nefarious character that is trying to destroy us that lives in in, you know, Delaware or New Jersey, that, you know, putting these chemicals together.
Right.
And I've heard certainly and read about how the major food companies have effectively known, you know, they have known in the last 15 to 20 years exactly what it is that we're talking about. But what I discovered, you know, with my Snickers bar and War and Peace, which was that they figured out that this was causing the same dopamine lift as was taking place with cigarettes. So it's the same people. And so it's the same neurochemistry, it's the same research.
Okay.
And once this was found out, you know, the game was on.
The game is on. When we get back, we're going to talk more with Dr. Doug Lyle about the pleasure trap and moving in a better direction, healthier. Stay here with me.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Glimmerglass Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World, next.
Think blue. Think beyond green. Think TDI clean diesel technology. One part of the Volkswagen Think Blue initiative, our goal of creating and encouraging eco-conscious products and behaviors. This is Mrs. Green. A car that can drive a long way should still make you want to, well, drive a long way. Volkswagen Jetta's TDI clean diesel is a high-mileage vehicle that lets you stop at the filling station less often so you can spend more time enjoying the road. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI.
Shop the Habit Store first for your home improvement needs, appliances, and furnishings. We have daily specials, weekly red tag sales, and occasional store-wide clearance events. Join our loyalty program and keep up with the special offers through Facebook, Twitter, and our monthly newsletter. Your good deals means Habitat Tucson can build and renovate more homes for hardworking people. The Habit Store hours are Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, Saturday, 8 to 4, and you'll find us on Grant Road, just east of I-10 in Tucson, Arizona.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And if you have been listening from the very beginning or whether you just joined us, we're giving you a lot to think about today. Let me say, I am not. Our guest today is Dr. Doug Lyle. He's the co-author of The Pleasure Trap, Mastering the Hidden Force That Undermines Health and Happiness. So that I don't waste more time telling you all the great things he has accomplished, I encourage you to Google him, to watch his TED Talk, and I hope it will be as life-changing for you as it is continuously for me, who's on this journey to a healthier way of living and eating. So, Dr. Lyle, thanks for being with us. And let's...
Oh, my pleasure, Jean.
It's really quite, you know, I'm a drama queen, so it's really hard when you want to be dramatic consciously to then do it, because I come by it very naturally. But this entire process has been... a dramatic change for me. And can we start by me just telling you one story? Because I think it does segue perfectly into what happens when you start changing because of the work I've done and the being around the Healthy You Network people. I was coming home from Phoenix yesterday, and I went into a convenience store. It was halfway. I was tired. It was late. And there's not any real food in there. I looked around. There was no real food. It's next to chair space with McDonald's. So I consciously said, okay, you're fallen, Chickie. You're going to eat some French fries. Now, that's the quintessence of what you describe. Fat, salt. I mean, and so I sat down and I ate it. Now, here's what happened to me. It didn't feel good, like not at all. I threw out some of them, and I came home, and I had an hour drive. I immediately brushed my teeth, flossed my teeth, and believe me, I am not the pure eater, but I thought maybe the journey is beginning for you, because it was not pleasurable for me at all. It was like, this is so gross. You weren't prepared. You didn't put anything in your purse to eat that you know is good for your body. And when you go into a convenience store, there's nothing going on there that's going to be a step in the right direction to healthy eating.
Yes, absolutely. That's a great story because it really does encapsulate this journey, and that is that you know better and you've been doing better, and so your taste buds are more sensitive, but they are still susceptible to the trap.
I was trapped.
And then when you step in it, it's enticing enough, but then it's really not that great. So you're now standing. I had somebody tell me once that middle age is a nice age because you can look back on your youth, but you can also look to the future, and you got enough wisdom to start making better decisions.
Right, right.
and so it's a vantage point, and the vantage point that a person can get to, if they work at it, is that they can. They're not perfect, and they're going to indulge now and then. But when they do, they can see that it's not that great. Whereas when you are in the trap, if you try to your first forays outside of the pleasure trap, when you go to very healthy food, can be a real struggle.
Right, right.
Because you're going from it's the equivalent of essentially. Someone who has, let's say they've been drinking 4 or 5 glasses of wine a night to go to none.
Right.
At that point, they're in withdrawal, and it's not pleasant. And in the same way that when we go from a conventional American diet to a healthier diet, our taste buds are in withdrawal. And so things taste flat, and we can't imagine that we would ever like them. But you can, but it takes some doing.
And do you believe from the science of what you have really researched and discovered and what you share that a plant-based diet is the way to go for the survival and good health of our species?
I would say this. I would say that a plant-based diet is the right direction. I would consider a very healthy whole foods-based plant diet to be what I would call True North, which is the name of our facility. That's the ultimate place on the compass. That's moving your health in exactly the right direction.
Right.
However, Alan and I always joke about what we call magnetic north, which is not quite north, but pretty darn good.
I like it a lot. I can't wait to meet him now, too.
Yeah. You'll remember what I said.
I will.
He is the evil twin. You can do a very good job and short of perfect, but you need to be sort of within 10 degrees. You need to be pretty good because when you're pretty good, then what happens is that doing the right thing is mostly your default, and doing things that are a little naughtier are indulgences, and you might even like them to some degree, but you don't like the feeling afterwards because
right.
You can feel the difference.
Right.
And that becomes sort of your little boundary lines. Your boundary lines become your feelings, and you associate those with your food choices, and it helps keep you in line.
And you never really, do you ever really get over it? That's not really a question I want to ask. I keep thinking about how I want to get there. But let's talk about the stages that you lay out that seem very manageable to break the cycle. And that I'm sure for me, it's going to be not once or twice or three times, but how to get back to the healthier path that I want to be on. So why don't you explain the cycles that you, go through in your presentation about, it's basically detox. That's what I would call it, like stopping the cycle.
Yes. There's more than one way to do this. And also people's personalities are different.
Right.
So it turns out that, but I'll give you sort of a general overview. And that is that there's people that, for example, when they stop smoking, they grit their teeth and just grind their way through the first week or so, which
perfect
is really
example.
Hard.
Yep.
And then if they can stick with it, then maybe they're good to go. Okay. There's other people who will just kind of cut down and then cut down a little more and cut down a little more, and they may never get all the way there. However, they may change a 20 cigarette a day habit down to 3 or 4, which is a big win. So my way of looking at this problem is that I'm after progress. I'm not after some ultimate, perfectionistic place.
Right, right.
And some people get to an ultimate perfectionistic place. And so Alan does. Alan lives there. And he never gets 1 inch out of line. I've been watching him like a hawk for 30 years.
Trying to catch him. Busting the evil twin. Oh, my gosh. That's fun. That's one of your guilty pleasures.
That's right. So I am not. I live my life about 90%, which is, in my day, that was an A in any class.
Right.
And so I figure if about 90% of my calories or 90% of my decisions are good decisions, I'm very happy with that, and that's good. So one way I like to get people to get started is to make a little check sheet for the week and have one box for each day, so a little 7 check marks, and put it up on the refrigerator or whatever. And your job is to try to, every day where you don't do anything out of line, you get a check box.
Okay.
And your job is to try to, if you can, do 2 days in a row.
Okay.
And so you may try to do this on Saturday, and then you flunk out because there's some tofutti cuties that you...
Or you go past a gelato store. Okay.
So you didn't make it on Saturday, okay? So now we try Sunday. And if we make it Sunday, great. But then maybe we don't make it through Monday. That's okay. So then Tuesday we get another chance, and then we're going to try to go through Tuesday. If we go through Tuesday, then maybe we can get Wednesday. If we get Wednesday, then we win, and we did 2 days. Now, the reason why I try to get people to play this game, and our job is, at the end of your first month, let's see if we can do this. If we can get a couple days in a row, a couple different weeks, we made some progress. You start getting used to the idea that you can actually survive your way through these momentary processes that, can sometimes last 15 or 20 minutes or half an hour when you're used to eating junk and at some point in your day, and you start thinking about it and all your memories start swirling around it. And you feel an internal push because that's your little drug addict brain looking
right,
for the dopamine
right.
hit. And so if you can push your way past it and then you kind of forget about it and you actually get through a day, you kind of look around, you're like, wow, I got through a day. It wasn't easy. It was a little touch and go there at 4 o'clock, but we actually did it. Well, once you've done that a couple of times in a row, you start realizing that this can be done. And that these cravings aren't all powerful.
Right.
And we start to get confidence that, essentially this is like learning to ride a bicycle. And you're going to take a bunch of spills, but you're also going to start to get that feeling of where you can ride it for 50 yards. And when you can do that, you start to know that in principle, you're going to be able to ride this thing. And that's an important part of the development rather than setting yourself up and saying, okay, this is the day that I begin, that for the next month I'm going to be perfect. That is not a realistic goal for most people, and it's not necessary.
And to me, it's akin to going on a diet. And I mean,
yeah.
To me, what you eat is your diet. You don't go on a diet, you eat. And what you
right.
say, I have to tell you what's going on for me right now, is that yes. you're affirming the possibility that this is within all of our reach. You're not saying, cut this out, cut that out, don't ever eat this, stop this. The voices start screaming, and you are not in a pleasure trap. You're in the pain avoidance saying, shut this guy up. So to
right.
me, it's like, no, you're saying the journey I'm on of in our family, like for my husband and I, eliminating, we don't bring Hershey's Kisses in the house because that's not
right.
a good idea for me. Okay,
yes.
So avoid that. I do have dark chocolate, fair trade, and I can mm-hmm. eat one tiny little piece of it. So that's the 10% you're talking about. It's
right.
not the best thing, but it's that little 10% of my guilty pleasure that doesn't make me feel deprived and want to just say, oh, screw it. I'm not gonna do this.
Absolutely. That then, and a lot of people can sit in equilibrium at about 90%.
It's so
it's
great
very
that
hard
you said
to sit
that.
In equilibrium at 50%.
And then there's Alan.
Then there's Alan.
Oh, my God. I cannot wait to say that to him. It's like, oh, yeah, you're the one that does it all right.
Believe me, just looking at him, you'll know he's the one.
Oh, I love it. I can't wait. You know, we should really, we don't have a lot of time left, which I knew was going to happen, but we should talk about what we're talking about for people that are not just in Tucson, but in the state of Arizona. It's so doable. On May 3rd and 4th, the Healthy You Network, which is one of the most amazing organizations that has come across my path in my journey of Mrs. Green, is hosting a special event at the Burger Center in Tucson about healthy food, healthy eating. You are going to be there. Alan's going to be there. Dr. John McDougall is going to be there. I mean, I'm like, wow, you've got to be, he's one of the proponents of keep it simple and you don't have to have 60 different kinds of foods a week. So he gave me some really good information on that too. So if people want to know, you go to healthyyou.org. I wrote it down in my notes, but I'm so captivated by the presentation that I'm like, okay, where do they have to go? Yeah, healthyyounetwork.org. And I just encourage people that are listening to the show, it's May 3rd and 4th, and take a step to changing your life forever. So let's go back to, okay, the next steps in the pleasure trap. Go on the journey. I do want to ask you this. Should you pick some foods that you know you love? Does that help? And how important is support from other organizations? And I think of AA and I think of Weight Watchers, wildly successful because you're surrounding yourself with a social circle that's supporting your choices. So how important is support in the healthy you that we want to be?
Well, it can be very important depending upon how social of a creature you are.
Right. That's a great answer.
It's certainly important for, I think the most important thing is that your immediate social environment, the people close to you, are kind of on board and are at least not antagonistic.
Right.
And so that's why I have a video called The Willpower Paradox.
Okay.
And that you can get from John McDougall's website. And on that video is the story of willpower, and the second video is called Getting Along Without Going Along, which is the story of how we deal with the social pressures of other people and how to smoothly manage, you know, the pressure that we sometimes fall prey to. So those are a whole host of things. But before we leave, I want to talk for just a minute about willpower. And I want to talk about a very important insight that we now have that we did not have, you know, 10 years ago. A set of research that took place at Case Western and then at Florida State University under the direction of Dr. Roy Baumeister has indicated to us that willpower is significantly about becoming fatigued in terms of making our decisions in a specific area of the brain.
Okay.
It winds up getting essentially glucose deficient. So we don't realize it, but when you're making a lot of hard decisions over an hour or so or 20 minutes, if you're a customer service rep or you're a mom and you've got three kids that you're trying to manage, or you're just in an intense conversation with anybody about anything,
right?
This actually sort of wears out that area of the brain, and it gets tired. And when it gets tired, it gets impulsive. And when it gets impulsive, it wants to recover glucose, and it specifically craves sweets. So it turns out that one of the best things that we can do when our willpower is a little low, when we actually have the decision to eat some junky food or not, the smartest move that you can make is to make a rule for yourself that says, I have to eat something healthy first.
That is great advice. Like, I could have made it another hour to come home without dying. Okay.
Right.
So that's great. It's like I was hanging on. So what should I have done? Just gotten water. Okay, we have 1 minute left, and I have to, it's like, it's breaking my heart, so let's hope we'll get you back. Everybody, come see Dr. Lyle on May 3rd and 4th in Tucson at the Burger Center. Check out his website, Google Doug Lyle, and you will be happy to be on a different path. thank you so much for doing this and for making it so interesting. Everybody, next week is the third of our 8-part show series, What Am I Eating and Why Should I Care? It all starts with your fork. And we're taking a little different track. Diane Ott Wheatley, co-founder and vice president of SeedSavers.org, why it's important that we save our seeds. I cannot wait to meet you, Dr. Doug Lyle. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.